Hello and welcome back to the Existential Echo Chamber podcast. For those of you who are following along, I have been updating my blog post here as recordings. So anyone who's been following along on the Existential Echo Chamber blog can now listen to the blog post if you would prefer to do that instead of reading them. For anyone who is just joining us, if you're new, welcome. It's great to have you. Wherever you found the podcast, if you would like, comment, and subscribe, upvote, whatever you can do, that would help out. Share it with your friends and spread the word. This is not just going to be a historical, philosophical podcast. We are also going to do interviews with people. We're going to talk about movies and comic books and music and video games and all the sorts of things that make life fun. We're going to talk about politics and the election. So we're always going to try to look at things from the big picture perspective. So we're going to ask how everything in our lives somehow contributes to our own sense of meaning and purpose and who we are and why we are the way we are, why we like the things we like, care about the things we care about. So if you like having really good big picture conversations about pretty much anything and everything and thinking too deeply about everything, then this is the podcast for you. Welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. Moving right along, today's post was from Friday, April 17th, 2020, and it was called Losing My Faith. This one was written sort of in response to people asking for me to set aside the historical stuff for a moment and kind of be a little bit more introspective. So this was an attempt to be a little bit more introspective about the process of stepping away from my evangelical faith that I had been raised to believe in and had been fully committed to for so long. So I hope you enjoy this glimpse into my psyche. Losing my faith. Reborn and shivering. Spat out on new terrain. Unsure, unconvincing. This faint and shaky hour. Day one. Day one. Start over again. Step one. Step one. I'm barely making sense. For now, I'm faking it till I'm pseudo making it. From scratch, begin again. But this time, I as I, and not as we. Alanis Morissette. As whenever people that have known me for a long time find out that I no longer identify as, I guess, what they would consider Christian, I get hit with these strange looks, the baffled protest, and occasional questions. Usually, I get asked about why I stopped believing. Now, sometimes, I'll get grilled about what I believe now. Losing my faith sparked people's curiosity for sure. But I almost never get asked how I feel about no longer believing the things I once held so dear. It's almost as if my feelings are assumed to be non-existent, as if suddenly not believing flipped some switch in my heart that shut it down completely and made it cold, dark, and distant. I guess it's possible that people simply don't think to ask. I mean, sometimes I wish they would. So far, during this blog experiment, I have mainly focused on the build-up to my loss of faith. More specifically, I've spent a good bit of time delving into the academic side of my journey. I hope you've been enjoying learning about some of the history, politics, and nuances of early Christian thinking. I will soon focus my attention back in that direction for a time period and finally write about the origins of heaven and hell, I promise. In this post, however, I will not be pursuing that topic. Instead, I'm going to try to explain a little bit about the emotional experience of leaving my faith. For anyone reading this who has ever experienced an ugly breakup of a close friendship or a good relationship, I think the best way I can describe coming to terms with my loss of faith is to compare it to that type of situation. It was every bit as painful, confusing, and frustrating. I experienced genuine, deep sadness. I developed insomnia and anxiety. I spent time being incredibly bitter and cynical. I got angry. I felt alone. I lost my motivation and my focus for a while. In short, I experienced what I would, in all seriousness, describe as the 7 stages of grief. And that may sound a little odd to some of you. All I can say is that having lost my father quite unexpectedly in 2018, I found myself going through that cycle again. And I recognized it as being very similar to what I experienced in 2015 when I walked away from Christianity. For the sake of brevity, I will not trace my path through all 7 stages in this post. If it's all the same to you, I will skip shock and denial, bargaining and testing, and focus on the 2 phases that will be of most direct interest to the story. Anger. There was a period of time shortly after I realized that I could no longer be intellectually honest with myself and still cling to the faith that had meant so much to me, when I began to feel deep resentment. I genuinely felt as if I had been lied to my whole life, that I had been brainwashed into believing obviously false ideas and indoctrinated with ignorance. I realized that I had been subject to a kind of psychological abuse at the hands of my family, the church friends, who had spent a quarter of a century persuading me that I was a bad person who deserved to burn in hell for all eternity and would only escape because God chose to intervene on my behalf. I began to see the entire message of Christianity as deeply anti-human. We tell children before they are old enough to even understand what we're talking about that they are born hopelessly flawed and deserving of death, judgment, and eternal conscious torment. Sure, we hide that stuff in vague language for little ones as long as we can, but by the time a child is old enough to start asking questions, we start teaching them the story about Jesus dying for our sins. Now, I'm sure parents equivocate on the matter, but the truth is simply that there is no way to honestly answer a child's questions about what that means without bringing up original sin, death, and hell. Once I no longer believed it, I was furious with the people who had taught me this abhorrent idea. I was furious with myself for telling others, and I was furious with a society that seems to rarely even question such taboo subjects because they feel as if faith is a personal matter that can't be criticized. The fact of the matter is this: hell does not exist. Jesus did not believe in hell. The Bible does not preach conscious eternal torment. It's honestly not that hard to fact check and debunk. It is a horrible, ugly lie, and it's a lie that has been used by the church for over 1,600 years to influence politics, control congregations, and persuade people that they are born fundamentally flawed. This is a form of psychological abuse. I make no apologies for that statement. Sometimes the truth is unpleasant. Coming to this realization that the church had fundamentally mischaracterized the message of Jesus and had slandered the God he so deeply believed in made me sick. I freely admit that sometimes the anger is still there, especially when somebody who hasn't bothered to do any research about the origins of such a ridiculously evil idea lectures me about morality. Over time, however, I came to realize that the reason why people believe the things they believe can be incredibly complicated. I don't believe anybody who teaches their child about hell is knowingly harming their child's psyche. I don't think that Christians mean to destroy a child's self-esteem by explaining the concept of sin. I do think the message itself, as presented in modern churches, is inherently anti-human in a lot of ways. But I am less concerned with what people of religious faith say, and far more concerned with how believers actually treat people they interact with. And when they act in love, kindness, and charity, I can often overlook my anger about the doctrine of hell. I will avoid getting into the philosophical, moral, theological, and historical arguments against the existence of hell. That will be the subject of another post. Having said that, it's time for me to move forward in my progression through the cycle of grief, skipping to the second, and for this post, final, step that will be of interest to this discussion. Depression. It's difficult for me to talk about this. I apologize if it's not particularly eloquent. When I lost my faith, I experienced a profound sense of loss. Jesus Christ had been my best friend for as long as I could remember. My entire life had been wrapped up in his words, his example, and his sacrifice for my sins. There is not a single person on earth that I cared about as deeply as I loved Jesus. There was nothing disingenuous, conditional, or phony about my faith. I felt God's presence in my life. I experienced being born again and the power of the Holy Spirit. This may be hard for a devout Christian to understand. It's even harder for me to explain. If you are now or have ever been a committed follower of Christ, try to imagine how in love you feel or have felt with Jesus on your best days. Imagine losing that. Imagine no longer recognizing Jesus when you read the Bible. Imagine no longer hearing his voice when you pray. Imagine no longer knowing what your purpose or place in the world is. And imagine being trapped in an environment in which even mentioning any of this would cost you most of your friends and family. I felt utterly, completely alone. I stopped sleeping. I lost my appetite for weeks. I developed nervous tics and anxiety. I cried a lot, and I could not tell anyone about it. The fear of being rejected by my family and friends was simply too real in my mind to justify reaching out to anyone for help. I missed Jesus. I missed praying to God, knowing that I had his ear and his heart. I missed the feeling that my life was guided and my steps were ordained. I missed the sense of community and belonging I had experienced with my church family. I suddenly felt adrift, as if every single thing I had ever known could no longer be trusted and that there was no foundation left on which to build my future. When you realize you've been living in the Matrix your whole life and that taking the red pill has changed everything forever, it can be incredibly devastating. As I have already begun to explain, the hardest part was not the cognitive dissonance brought on by the complete implosion of my theological beliefs. The hardest part was the social ramifications of my loss of faith. As of today, roughly 30 people in the world know that I am no longer what you would call a traditional Christian. Only 2 or 3 of these people are members of my family. None of them are part of my immediate family that I have the most consistent close contact with. My father passed away without ever learning the truth. I am relieved that this is the case. I could not have handled suddenly becoming a pariah in my own home. Eventually, I had no choice but to tell my closest friends. It was a matter of life and death. Most of them seemed to understand and stuck around. A few acted like I never told them and have never mentioned it again. Only a few of my friends decided to ask me personal questions about how I was doing with my loss of faith. Ironically, one of my good friends was also experiencing a change of heart about Christianity at the same time. I genuinely think I would not have recovered emotionally if it weren't for that friend. If you're reading this blog, you are one of the 30 people that know. I am sharing this story with you because it's my story. I need to tell it, and I trust you. There are many other people I would like to tell, people I love. People I value greatly, people that I wish so badly that I could talk to about this. I would no doubt lose some of these loved ones, and I wish I could say that anyone who would choose to no longer associate with me because of my lack of faith is somebody I don't need in my life to begin with, but anybody who loves their family and close friends will understand that it's not that simple. I wish it were. If I weren't writing this blog anonymously, maybe I could help other people who feel trapped in a similar situation, particularly in the Bible Belt. Being in the closet as Christian turned whatever I am is incredibly lonely. I empathize with other individuals who fear losing loved ones, opportunities, and a chance for a happy life simply for being who they are. Ironically, it is these other people, the marginalized, the outcast, the black sheep of society that Jesus cared so deeply for and longed so passionately to introduce the kingdom of God to. I wish I could wrap this post up with some clear resolution, but that would be disingenuous. The truth of the matter is that I have not yet completed the grieving process over my loss of faith. My obsessive search for the origins of my old beliefs is probably just an elaborate coping mechanism. My search for the truth is a search for meaning, a search for purpose in a seemingly indifferent world. While it is true that I've made some progress, and I am starting to open up a little bit, I still feel isolated from most of the people I genuinely care about in significant ways. I still feel alone when I look up at the stars and no longer feel as if God is there somewhere, just beyond the reach of my perception, guiding my path and answering my prayers. I miss my best friend, Jesus, more than I could ever put into words, and I don't know if I will ever really be able to talk about that with anyone. As Frodo says near the end of Lord of the Rings, there are some things that time can't mend. Some hurts go too deep. I no longer believe in God in the same way that most people do. I don't believe that I will be anywhere when I die other than wherever I was before I was born. I don't suppose I will ever see my dad again. And though I wish for it with all of my heart, my longing doesn't make it true. I suspect this worldview will seem sad and frightening to some. It certainly was to me at first. I still have a long way to go. I have had to start my life over in some ways, and while it has been the hardest situation I've ever experienced, I have come to find it liberating. I have come to embrace the idea that this life can be whatever I make of it. My destiny is not written in the stars by God. It is forged right here on earth by my own blood, sweat, and tears. The measure of a life well lived is not in commandments kept, verses memorized, sermons attended, or praises sung. The measure of a truly purpose-driven life is how well we loved other people, and how much they loved us in return. The legacy we leave behind is the impact we had on others. Did we leave the world a better place than when we found it? There is no greater force for change in the world than love. I think my old friend Jesus would agree. He hoped for a better world. He believed fiercely in the kind of moral conviction it would take for each one of us to achieve it. He died defending that message, and he made the world a better place because of his faith. So please understand that I still find value in faith. My faith just rests elsewhere now. My faith is in people. My faith is in our ability to change, to grow, to learn, to do better, to be better. We aren't alone. We have each other. And as recent times have so poignantly illustrated, sometimes the only thing that makes life worth living is each other. For my life, I offer God no credit and assign no blame. It is my responsibility to make something of myself and to give off more light than darkness, to create more order than chaos. It is my job, not Christ, to make amends for the mistakes I've made. I have to learn for myself how to forgive others and seek forgiveness. If this life is all we've got, the absence of a God doesn't cheapen it. Rather, it makes it far more profound. If this is all we have, if we are all we have, how precious is this time we have together? How ought we to live if this is our only shot? I believe that we ought to hug one another a little tighter and love a little deeper. We should laugh more often and cry more openly. We should express ourselves, learn, travel, experience all that life has to offer. Don't miss out on this world because you're so anxious to get to the next one. None of us knows for sure what comes next when this ride ends, but we have our friends and family. We have here and we have now. That's all we can be certain of. We get one relatively short life, and it's up to us to decide what we're going to do with it. I suggest we love, forgive, and strive for compassion. I recommend taking full responsibility for your actions, Tell the truth. Say what you mean. Mean what you say. Hold each other accountable. Learn. Grow. Become more than we are right now. When times get tough, remember that dragons can be defeated. Demons can be exorcised. Storms can be calmed. And if life is lived the right way, death loses its significance. We don't overcome death by avoiding it. We overcome death by living the right way. And as we inspire others to do so, we let our own light shine. And it is this light, I believe, that confounds the darkness, creates order out of chaos, heals broken hearts, and changes the world. Invictus. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. William Ernest Henley.